Well, good evening, everybody. If we could take our Bibles and open them to Matthew 6 and verses 9 through 13. Matthew chapter 6, verses 9 through 13. As has been mentioned, the title of this session is The Dispensational and Kingdom Implications of the So-Called Lord's Prayer. Y'all ever prayed the Lord's Prayer before? Sure. I'm going to give you a way of looking at it that some of you might get mad at me because you're going to realize you've been praying it incorrectly. And I know that to be so because for many, many years I prayed this prayer thinking I knew what it meant, only to have somebody come along and help me with this. My professor, Dr. Toussaint, who I'll have the source at the bottom of the screen, is really the one that opened my eyes to the true meaning of this prayer. So many, many years I prayed the prayer thinking I knew what it meant, but I got under Dr. Toussaint's ministry and then I discovered what the true meaning of it is. As we're going to see, it's all about the kingdom. So let's take a look at this, Matthew 6 and verses 9 through 13. Pray then this way, Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Before I get into the specifics of the Lord's Prayer, one of the things that's happening today, and you all are aware of this, is many, many people in what is called the emerging church or the emergent church. Have you heard of that? Okay. Their big thread or their big push is that we're in the kingdom now. And they believe that the teachings of Jesus, they like to quote Jesus, but they quote Jesus to such an effect that Jesus, in their minds, is saying that we are in the kingdom. So Brian McLaren says he selected 12 and trained them in a new way of life. He set them to teach everyone this new way of life. Even if only a few would practice this new way, many would benefit. Oppressed people would be free. Poor people would be liberated from poverty. Minorities would be treated with respect. Sinners would be loved and not resented. Industrialists would realize that God cares for the sparrows and the wild flowers, so their industries would respect and not rape the environment. The homeless would be invited in for a hot meal. And then, notice this next line, the kingdom of God would come. Not everywhere at once, not suddenly, but gradually, like seed growing in a field. And watch this, like yeast spreading in a lump of bread dough. Now remember, we said that the yeast is something bad, not good. They're treating it differently. Like light spreading across the sky at dawn. This is Brian McLaren's summation of what the ministry of Christ is all about. He brought in the kingdom and worked to continue bringing in the kingdom. And as we do this, all of these wonderful things are supposed to happen. Doug Padgett, emergent church leader, says the kingdom of God is a central conversation in emerging communities. And let me tell you, kingdom of God language is really big in the emerging church. This is the type of diet that our kids are being hit with constantly through Christian media, Christian youth groups to some extent, Christian literature. They're all talking about the kingdom. Even a lot of the songs that they sing are all about the current manifestation of the kingdom. Brian McLaren writes, if Revelation were a blueprint about the distant future, it would have been unintelligible to its original readers. In light of this, Revelation becomes a powerful book about the kingdom of God here and now, available to all. I do believe that the book of Revelation is about the kingdom. I just don't believe the kingdom is here and now. Rick Warren. You all heard of Rick Warren? Okay. Got quite a reaction on that one. Very, very prominent pastor, author of a best-selling book, The Purpose-Driven Life. And Rick Warren is constantly talking about bringing in the kingdom. He says, I stand before you confidently right now and say to you that God is going to use you to change the world. I'm looking at a stadium full of people right now who are telling God they will do whatever it takes to establish God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. See, he just quoted the Lord's Prayer here. What will happen if the followers of Jesus say to him, we are yours? And what kind of spiritual awakening will occur? In a book called Hole in the Gospel, Stearns writes this. If we are to be part of this coming kingdom, God expects our lives, our churches, our faith communities, two, to be characterized by these authentic signs of our own transformation. Compassion, mercy, justice, and love demonstrated tangibly. Only then will our light break forth like the dawn, our healing quickly appear, and our cries for help be answered with a divine, here I am. He goes on and he says, the gospel that we have been given, the whole gospel, is God's vision for a new way of living. Christ's vision was of a redeemed world order populated by redeemed people now. To accomplish this, we are to be salt and light in a dark and fallen world. Here comes the yeast again. You ready? The yeast that leavens the whole loaf of bread, the whole of society. We are the ones God has called to be His church. It's up to us. We are to be the change. By the way, you hear the phrase change agent a lot in these writers. They want people to go into churches and change them in this kingdom now direction. And you're called a change agent if you do that. But a changed world requires change agents. There's the buzzword. And change agents are people who have first been changed themselves. Now, you read some of this and you say, I agree with some of it. I mean, we are to be salt and light. But when you really get into the particulars of these quotes, they're talking about the church is the kingdom and is to transform society. They believe that this is the ministry of Jesus. And that's why Stern's book is called A Hole in the Gospel. The title of it suggests that we haven't been presenting the gospel accurately. We've been too busy trying to get souls into heaven, and we haven't done enough for society. And that's why the world doesn't take our message seriously. Russell Moore, I've used this quote before, says the focus of the kingdom of God in this age is within the church. Where Jesus rules as King, as we live our lives together, we see the transforming power of the gospel and the inbreaking of the future kingdom of God. What is happening today is there is a recycling of an ancient heresy. Now, up in the top corner, in the top circle, in the north, is the school of Antioch. Early Christianity divided into two schools. There was the Antiochian school up north, and then down south, there's another circle around Alexandria, Egypt. And early Christianity divided amongst those two schools. And really, the division had to do with proper interpretation of Bible prophecy. The school at Antioch, and by the way, Antioch has a greater connection to the apostles, doesn't it? Wasn't it Paul that launched his three missionary journeys from Antioch? Antioch were the early premillennialists. They called themselves Kiliasts, as I mentioned in a prior session. And they're the ones that insisted that Bible prophecy is literal. And they dominated the church for the first two centuries. But down south, there arose another school of thought from Alexandria, Egypt. Alexandria, Egypt was a hotbed of Gnosticism. Gnosticism essentially taught that the physical world is evil and the spiritual world is good. Now, is the physical world evil? No, because what did God say after He created everything in 6 days? Yeah, He said it's very good. Now, that includes sex, procreation, food, sunlight. There's no hint in Genesis 1:31 where God says it's very good that the physical world is bad. But you see, the early Alexandrian school taught that the physical world is evil. Now, if the physical world is evil, and as Gnostic thinking seeped into the thinking of the theologians at Alexandria, Egypt, it started to wreak a havoc on their doctrines.